Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
.42 here on WGN. John Hansen in for Dean Richards. We'll take it till 1 o'clock here this afternoon. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Text in, call in, anything you want. Join the conversation, of course. Hey, Northwestern Medicine, Palos Hospital is announcing a new hybrid vascular operating room, which, according to the article I'm reading, brings leading-edge surgical technology and advanced vascular care to the South Suburbs. That sounds like good news. Dr. Gabriel Wallace joins us now. He is a vascular surgeon and director of vascular surgery at Northwestern Medicine, Palos Hospital. Hello, Dr. Wallace.
Good morning, John. Thanks so much for having me on the radio. It's a real privilege to be interviewed by an Emmy and Silver Dome Award journalist.
Well, look at that. Yeah, I wish every guest would read my credentials out beforehand. Thank you, Dr. Wallace. I got to ask, this is a dumb question, but this is why, you know, I got that Silver Dome Award. What is vascular surgery, if, for those that don't know, including myself?
Thanks, John. Vascular surgery is a subspecialty of general surgery. Vascular surgeons typically go to medical school for 4 years, followed by a general surgery residency for 5 years minimum, up to 7 years, depending on research. And then typically a 2-year fellowship in vascular and endovascular therapy. There's also a new route that is somewhat expedited, which is between 5 and 7 years, called the direct pathway. And vascular surgeons are blood vessel surgeons who operate on the vascular system, which essentially is all of the arteries and veins, except for those that are in the skull themselves or attached to the heart, or directly on the heart.
So cardiologists or cardiac surgeons do the heart, someone else, the brain surgeons do the brain, and you guys do the rest of the arteries and veins everywhere else in the body.
That's correct. We operate essentially from the top of the neck all the way down to the toes, whether it be the carotid arteries, the aorta, the iliac arteries, arteries in the leg or the arms, and then the veins as well.
What sorts of things are you guys fixing in there?
Vascular surgeons typically operate for blockages or aneurysms. So we're opening up blockages and doing bypasses around blockages, using stents and balloon angioplasty to open up blockages, replacing arteries that are aneurysmal. And a large component of our work also that is not typically public facing is supporting the invasive operations in the remainder of the hospital. So helping out other physicians who may be doing invasive procedures in the operating room or the emergency room, interventional radiology, or the intensive care unit. We're always on backup to help out in case someone needs a hand with these types of procedures or runs into trouble.
What you guys do may not operate directly on the heart or the brain, but I imagine keeping the arteries and veins clear or as clear as they can be ultimately helps heart and brain health, right?
Well, there's very specific indications for repairing blockages. We don't typically fix blockages unless there's a reason to, and not all blockages need to be treated. There is some evidence coming out in the scientific literature that improving the blood flow to the brain may help with memory and some types of dementia, but that is currently not an indication for revascularization of the carotid arteries or the arteries that go to the brain. With the main indication right now for intervening on the blood supply to the brain being stroke risk reduction or stroke prevention.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at. I imagine that that all helps just your overall health. So this new center, you know, when we talk about the advances that have been made in all sorts of medical fields, I imagine the same can be said for vascular surgery, right? I mean, I'm sure it's been a groundbreaking 20 plus years in the study of this.
Right now is a super exciting time for vascular surgery. We've seen a real tremendous improvement in the imaging modalities that we have over the last 2 decades.
What does that mean, Sai?
We're really, really excited about the different imaging modalities or the different ways that we use imaging to both help to diagnose vascular problems and also treat them in a way that's easier for patients to go through. Whereas 30 years ago or so, most of the operations were open, such as treatment of an abdominal aortic aneurysm, or what is called AAA, requiring a big operation with a week or two in the hospital and months to recover. Now we can diagnose and perform an operation for and have a patient home the next day because of our ability to do CT scans, contrast-enhanced CT scans, X-ray-based technology such as fluoroscopy or angiography, and ultrasound, both in and outside of the body. When it's inside, it's called intravascular ultrasound. But the advent of this room brings together all these amazing imaging technologies in a way that we can offer operations to be done faster, safer, more minimally invasive, and with less radiation to help patients get through them faster and get home faster.
It makes sense. The more you can see and the better you can see it, the more targeted I bet you can be. Once you actually go in there, you mentioned in the years past it would be an open surgery. Are there advances in the technology of how minuscule these tools can be to get in and do their job?
Absolutely. Sometimes open surgery is still needed, and sometimes these technologies can help us to make an open operation less invasive, which we would call, quote unquote, a hybrid operation using some minimally invasive components or X-ray components combined with an open exposure or some part of an open operation. But even still, many of these operations that took large incisions before can be done with a 1 centimeter incision now in a one-night hospital stay.
If someone, I guess what I was asking, because I know there's so many different things that can bring you in front of a vascular surgeon, but like just us at home, are there symptoms or signs or things any of us should be looking for that might indicate there's something wrong with our arteries and vessels in our body right now?
That is a great question, John. The answer is really broad. Typically, one would have a problem recognized by a primary care provider or a cardiologist that would lead to a referral to a vascular surgeon, more so than somebody recognizing something on their own and self-referring. But obviously, any signs or symptoms of stroke or family history of someone having an aneurysm or pain in the legs or calves while you're walking would be something to bring up to your primary care provider or cardiologist, and they could evaluate further and determine whether a referral to a vascular surgeon would be the right next step.
So they kind of do the heavy lift isn't the right term. They do the initial look at, see, and talk through it, and then they would refer us to you.
Mostly correct, yes.
Okay. Mostly correct should be in my bio, too. I'll take that anytime, Dr. Wallace, if I'm mostly correct about anything. Okay, so you're excited about this new technology. What contributes to some of the problems that lead to people showing up in your vascular surgeon's room or wherever you are? Is it all the standard things that we know we should be doing better with diet and exercise, helping keep our veins and arteries as clean as possible? Or do genetics play a large role, all of the above?
You got it. You're welcome to come on into my office sometime and help me out, honestly. Smoking is the main risk factor, both for blockages and for aneurysms and progression of aneurysms. And then all of the typical risk factors for what we call atherosclerotic disease or hardening of the arteries, heart disease, play a part for vascular disease as well, high blood pressure, uncontrolled diabetes, non-optimal weight, and of course, typical American diet are all contributors to vascular disease.
Anything else you want to say about your new center or what you're doing and what you're excited about?
Oh, absolutely. We're really excited about this operating room. Our goal in the Bloom Cardiovascular Institute is really to bring academic level cardiovascular care to where people live and work without having to travel, and bring the greatest and newest technology to our community where patients can access it on their terms.
Congratulations on the... Oh, keep going. Sorry, sir.
Oh, yeah. And would it be okay if I gave a couple shout-outs?
Oh, please. I mean, how many's a couple? I mean...
There's a few. Honestly, okay. Because, the surgeon is generally the most visible person, but everybody knows my team really well. All of our patients know my team. And it's really important to remember that every surgeon is backed up by a large team that allows these operations to be planned, performed, and followed up without a hitch. So My thanks are thanks to Neil Bloom and the other contributors who made the Bloom Cardiovascular Institute possible going into our 20th anniversary. Thanks to Doug Johnson, Patrick McCarthy, and Mark Escondiri for steering the Cardiovascular Institute. My mentors from Northwestern and University of Washington, Mark Escondiri, Andy Houle, Ben Starrs, and Nam Tran, and our whole outpatient and inpatient team. Can I keep going for a sec?
Sure. Go ahead.
The team is so important, really. Our team is so important because we really try to provide care to patients that we would want for our own family. And so our team is really like family, and we approach our patient care this way. So our medical assistants, Nancy Andrade, Alyssa Garoga, Chrissy Batzel, our nurses, Dave Gonzalez and Kristen Pintozzi, our advanced practice practitioners, Rachel Briel, Ethan Wells, Katie Vella, our sonographers, Kathy Bernotovicius, Amal Tamalier, Kelly Cermak, my partners downtown, and my partner on site, Dr. Nanda Nath, and our administrative partners, our hospital president, Mike Vivoda, who has been instrumental in supporting our programmatic growth and this operating room to be built. Sunan Muthars and John Mulrooney, Sarah Plaskett,
wow,
Kay Matusik, and Matt Dyke.
Okay, you set a record. I think I'm going to stop you right there. I think I counted 19. I thought you were going to do kids and spouse. I'm not opening the door for that. Hey, whatever, man. We got 4 hours to fill, so we got, you killed about a minute with some names there. No, I love the idea of that, too, right? You do get to be the forward-facing person, and I totally get that, too, as someone who gets to be the person on the microphone. It takes an entire team and village to put this all together. I'm sure it's the exact same thing in Northwestern, your entire hospital, let alone Palos Hospital and all that you guys do. I appreciate all the shout-outs, Dr. Wallace. That was great. And I worry to ask this. Anything else you want to add?
No, thanks so much. Okay. We're always accepting new patients. We're happy to provide second opinions. We try to make it really approachable and make the actual logistics of the care and the care coordination seamless so that people can really focus on the actual medical component of the care and the surgical component of care and, not have to worry about when the appointment is or having the imaging that they need. We try to take care of all of that. So we're easy to get a hold of through the main line. I can say that if you like, but we're always available with our office on site at Palos Hospital and a new outpatient center in Mokena to provide the best services we can for the South region.
Before I let you go, 630 wanted to know, this is for the vascular doctor. If you have a CT scan that is not the contrast one, for an aneurysm in an abdomen, can you see it just from a traditional CT scan?
Great question. Absolutely, you can see it. So if you have a CT scan of, the abdomen and the pelvis, it will show all of the structures. The contrast can be administered at different points in the cardiac cycle. So when you give contrast through an IV, it can either light up the veins or the arteries or both or the soft tissues. And so the best CT scan to look at an arterial problem would be an arterial protocol contrast CT or CT angiogram CTA, which really lights up the arteries themselves. But even without the contrast, with a standard non-contrast CT scan, you can see the outline of everything. You can see the calcium, and you can absolutely see if there's an aneurysm or not and measure it. So say someone has a small aneurysm on a non-contrast CT scan and they come to see me. That's completely adequate to make a recommendation for surveillance interval and type of surveillance and all the other associated screening and counseling that comes along with an aneurysm diagnosis. If you have a non-contrast CT scan and it's big enough that it's indicated for repair, we would then follow that up with a CT angiogram for actual operative planning.
Okay, so a CT scan, we'll get it. I thought you were about to give us the list of the people who invented the CT scan, but shout out to them as well. Dr. Wallace, we are out of time. I appreciate it. Congratulations on everything. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks, John. Have a great day.
It's Dr. Gabriel Wallace having a little fun. He did ask ahead of time if he could give some shout outs, and he sure did. Love that. Hey, tell you what, let's take a break. We have news coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.